there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You are listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. I write the Cats Report for the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly, and I write for all the titles in Greenspun Media Group. And checking in from our Montana Bureau is Trisha McCrone, better known as my dear friend and co-host. What's going on, Dishy?
You know, I don't even remember what life outside of Montana is like. This is crazy.
Well, there's we have outdoor, we have indoor plumbing.
That thing is called. Yeah, you know, going to outhouse all the time has been kind of crazy.
There are no signs for sheep crossing that I've seen.
There
in
you go.
Clark County.
That happens. I'm living in the lake. It's so refreshing, so amazing. Like, it's going to be very strange, the thought of putting on makeup and wearing high heels and all of that that I must do in Las Vegas. I'm going to have to reteach myself how to do everything.
You know, since you've been gone, I've picked up that practice, and I don't know how you do it. I mean, it takes me three times as long to get into work attire as it used to, and I also got an automatic watch winder that I have to show you when you.
You have an automatic watch winder.
I have an automatic watch winder that a friend of mine gave me, and it's fantastic.
I bet I know that friend. I think I did. Yes, and I'm going to give an early shout-out, happy birthday to my mom. This Saturday is Marilyn McCrone's birthday.
Yes, yes, yes. Happy birthday to Marilyn.
I have to give out a happy birthday to Marilyn. And you know what the funny thing is that since I've been here, I haven't even reset my watch because I'm an hour ahead here. But I've been here, what, six
You've
weeks,
been there for about 9 months.
9 months, probably? Yeah, and I have not. As a matter of fact, I have a child now, Kat, so I thought I should.
I knew it! Does he look like me?
A lot of things have happened. I've been divorced twice. It's kind of crazy.
How much does Johnny Jr. look like me? That's the question.
Yes, of course. It has glasses and looks just like a caricature.
The kid's in for nothing but grief.
But, you know, I've never even put my watch on the correct time because who really cares what time it is?
Time stands still and is forever moving up there. You're near, where you are is near Kalispell, Montana, basically, and the lake you refer to is Flathead Lake.
Yes,
for those who
gorgeous.
Are looking for a point of reference for where Dishy is.
And it messes with your head because it's still light out at 9:45 at night.
Yeah, the northern point up there. Yeah, I remember that from being up there last year, that it did stay light for a long time, which I liked a lot. And what a beautiful picturesque. We talk about this every time that we talk to you from there. It's a picturesque, beautiful postcard setting, that massive, massive body of water just south of Glacier National Park on the Canada-Montana border.
Ziplining. Yesterday, I didn't end up going, and I thought about our last ziplining adventure up in Whitefish in the around that area.
We had quite
the fun time ziplining.
We lost two members of our party, and we never heard from them again. I think they're living off the land, foraging for nuts and berries.
They're living off the huckleberries if they're back in season. Just tell me what's going on there. What are you doing?
You know, I've been running around as I usually do. I went out to see, for starters, Sky D Miles and Sky 5 and their show off Sundays over at the Trop, which we have to get you to.
Stephanie
Sanchez sang and Tara Paulsha danced, and the Tenors showed up one time, formerly known as the Canadian Tenors. They showed up and sang, and this deal starts at 9:30 on Sundays, and it's a very, very cool hang. And I'll, I was hanging out with the likes of Marie Sawchuk and Zoe Bowie and Tara and Sky and Steph, and it's a very, very cool kind of old Vegas thing that they just started in the middle of July on Sky's birthday on the 15th. And it's turned into a very cool hang, so that's a relatively new thing. I went to the Bootlegger on Monday night and hung out with Kelly Clinton.
And
our friend Jerry Jones got up and sang a little bit, and
love him.
Yeah, it's been a you know, running around. I've been hanging out a little bit with Taylor Hicks and wrote about him in a column I just posted most recently from Bally's and Indigo over there, and we went and saw Clint at Cabaret Jazz on Sunday, and Taylor's trying to get a toehold, or has a toehold, and trying to get a firmer hold on a residency here in Las Vegas, and we're hoping to bring him in. He wants to come in and talk to us.
As soon as I get back from the Montana Bureau.
He owes me because I gave him a ride back to Bally's from Cabaret Jazz.
I booked Mo Fish from Mo Fish Charter Fishing. Is
you
that a good
him?
Booking?
You can never have Mo Fish. as they say.
I know. Isn't his name Mo Fish?
Isn't there enough fish?
I think I've got him lined up. He's got a lot of other shows trying to get him. So
bring him down. The more the merrier on our Intermountain West version of Cats with the Dish. The Big Sky version. We got to cut to our guest this week, which
I will not be a part of this interview.
You will not be a part of, but he does an impression of you.
You don't have to listen to me anymore.
I should have asked him. This is a taped interview. I should have asked him to do an impression of you because he does everybody else. Up next, after Josh Bell's movie review, is the esteemed legendary impressionist Rich Little, who's headlining at Shimmer Cabaret at LVH. So stick around. I know I will.
I'm Brace.
I'm Steven.
From Showtime's Gigolos.
With Cats with the Dish, 91.5 KUNV.
Where are we going?
June. Your name is June. June Monroe. Say it.
June Monroe.
Say it.
June Monroe.
Now pick a place you live. The last place you live, the place you know.
Bethesda.
Bethesda. Then that's where you live. Anybody asked? You're June Monroe from Bethesda. You lost your wallet. I'm driving you home. My name is James. James and June. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Jeremy Renner and Rachel Weisz in The Bourne Legacy, the fourth movie in the Bourne series, and the first not to feature major star Matt Damon. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. The desperation is pretty self-evident throughout The Bourne Legacy, which casts Jeremy Renner as enhanced secret agent Aaron Cross, the series' successor to Jason Bourne, who had been played by Matt Damon. Director and co-writer Tony Gilroy, who worked as a screenwriter on the first three Bourne movies, spends the first half of the movie painstakingly establishing the connections to the existing Bourne universe, but Legacy is remarkably slow and lethargic, with only sporadic action until its climax. I give The Bourne Legacy 2.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week in limited release is Ruby Sparks, starring Paul Dano as a blocked novelist who's surprised and elated to discover that the dream girl he's been writing about, played by Zoe Kazan, has suddenly become real.
Have we met before?
I don't think so. What's your dog's name?
Scotty. I named him for F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Who?
F. Scott Fitzgerald, the novelist.
I don't read a lot of fiction.
At first, Calvin is ecstatic to discover his fictional dream girl somehow appearing in the flesh, but he reveals his desperate possessiveness as Ruby asserts her own independent identity. Ruby Sparks is an incisive, funny, and well-acted look at the messy complications of even the most seemingly picture-perfect relationships. I give Ruby Sparks 3.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting in studio now is an entertainment legend by anyone's estimation. He's one of the great impressionists and is currently starring in Jimmy Stewart and Friends at Shimmer Cabaret at LVH. That was once known as Las Vegas Hilton, folks. In the show, he brings to life many iconic figures over the history of show business, including Laurel and Hardy, George Burns, Henry Fonda, Jack Benny, and, of course, Jimmy Stewart. He has a very good Ronald Reagan and a terrific Paul Lynn and Johnny Carson, of course. Welcome to the show, Rich Little.
I'm glad you didn't introduce me as the man of 1,000 voices. I get so tired of
we've
that.
We've had 1,001 voices since then, 1,002
nobody
voices.
Nobody does 1,000 voices. That came from Long Chaney from the 30s, who did 1,000 faces.
All right.
I don't even think he did 1,000 faces. I mean, who does 1,000 faces?
Hard to do faces and voices.
And then all of a sudden, man of 1,000 voices. Well, I've yet to see anybody that can do 1,000 voices.
How many?
I could do, if I was, sat down and went through the list of my impressions, I could probably do about 200.
Really?
Like, yeah, but I would do in those 200 people I'd never do on stage. I don't know what kind of a film buff you are. I do Zachary Scott, and I do Trevor Howard, and I do, George Brent and Charles Bickford. I mean, all these character actors.
Do it for a film appreciation class.
I love
class.
Character actors.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know,
now when people go to see this show, they I wonder if they don't expect that you're going to be doing a stand-up act, like your straight recitation.
Well, that's one of the mistakes I've had with Jimmy Stewart and Friends. Is it was a mistake, and we're putting now on the advertising on hilarious comedy.
mm-hmm.
because, you know, a lot of people don't know what they're going to see.
Right.
Rich Little does Jimmy Stewart. What, does he talk about him? Does he show film clips? Is it serious? You know, it could have been a serious...
It could go any direction. It could be a theater
piece.
It's a one-man show.
Most one-man shows you see on somebody, you know, like Mark Twain or Harry Truman or somebody, mm-hmm. they're all serious.
Mm-hmm.
So to do one that's a comedy is a rare thing. And my show, except for the last 6 minutes, is a comedy.
Yeah, it's where you, as Stewart, introduce people who had some sort of
impact. Some sort of a connection.
Connection to Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, some of them are a little thin, but there is some connection.
Uh-huh. Why did you pick Stewart to be the core of this?
Well, I thought about Ronald Reagan. I wanted to do a one-man show on him. The problem with Ronald Reagan is, the plus is that he's so well-loved. And if you do something political, you can get into a lot of doors, especially mm-hmm. in Washington. But the thing about Ronald Reagan is what other people are you going to do? I guess other presidents, I guess.
You could draw in other political figures.
But not too many movie stars, because he didn't make many great movies mm-hmm. with many great stars. Jimmy Stewart came about because I knew him well. I spent a lot of time with him. I every time I saw him, we talked about his career. So I knew a lot about him. I've read a lot of books on his life. I always admired him. It was the first impression I ever did.
Oh, really?
And also, I knew that he'd worked with so many great stars that a lot of the stars that I do that I normally wouldn't do on stage, Lionel Barrymore, Robert Stack, you know, I can put into the show because they have a reason, you know?
Right, right. Do you remember the first time you did your impression of Stewart for Stewart and how he reacted to that?
Yeah. Actually, it's on that little film clip you saw before the show
that
starts.
That was the first time that he had seen you do it?
When I did that Georgie Jessel roast, uh-huh. some black and white, boy, it shows you how long ago that was, half-hour show.
Right.
It was a roast. And before Dean Martin, it was Georgie mm-hmm, Jessel mm-hmm. was the host. And they hosted Jimmy Stewart. And I was on and I sang People, mm-hmm. the song People, as Jimmy Stewart. And hitting those high notes as Jimmy can't. they kept showing shots of him laughing and reacting to it. And that was the first time I ever met him.
Really? That was
about 1963.
That was very early in your career.
Yeah, I look about 14 in
that. Yeah, exactly. You do look like your own son in a lot of ways in that clip. And he was fond of it. In that clip, he had a good response to it.
Oh, yeah. And then down through the years, we met at charity events. Boy Scout things. He was involved with the Scouts because I was a Boy Scout. Cancer, heart, all kinds of charity. The latter part of his life, he spent just doing mm-hmm. Personal appearances and raising money, you know, for charity. And I even picked him up a couple of times at his house. And then we did the Julie Andrews show together.
Right.
And did some sketches together and did The Tonight Show. I interviewed him on The Tonight Show,
mm-hmm.
and that was a great thrill, and also the Dean Martin roast. So, you know, I spent a lot of time with him.
Right. In the show, you bring about so many figures over the long and deep course of history.
Yeah.
In fact, you sort of make fun of that at the end of the show. Like if you know everybody in the show, you've got to be
100.
More than 100 years old,
yeah.
which has to be true.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly what is the point of bringing out characters who are so far removed from the audience's frame of reference? Is it to remind people of who they were? Is it sort of a entertainment history lesson to you?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think when you do Lionel Barrymore, I don't think people really mm-hmm. know Lionel Barrymore except for It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
Mr. Potter, they remember Mr. Potter.
Right.
I don't think they remember anything else.
There are a lot of who could fall into that category. Like, I feel like they're familiar. Walter Brennan, you know.
Walter Brennan made a lot of movies, but mm-hmm.
a long time ago
and was mm-hmm. quite a character. The Real McCoys on TV. If I was going to take somebody out of the show, I'd take Walter Brennan out.
Would you?
Yeah, because PBS are thinking of putting the show on, and they want it down to an hour. So I'd have to take stuff out of it.
Oh, yeah, because it runs
an hour and a half.
A healthy 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
And I would take some of those older stars out because they fit the storyline, but... boy, you know, you go back that far, and you got to be over 60 to get them all. Isn't it amazing when I say to the audience, "Did you get a lot of the stars?" And a lot of people say, "Yes, we got them all. We got them all." But I'm not sure that's true.
Well, you can understand, actors and especially comic actors who are sort of outside your own age division. I mean, like, you know, I recognize certainly Laurel and Hardy, for example, or George Burns.
Right.
I mean, but it's in part because you've helped keep them in the current discussion.
Yeah.
And I think that seems like it's a goal of yours to keep their memories alive.
Well,
somehow.
Somebody said to me, I guess when Rich Little dies, all these old stars will die with them.
Yeah, regardless.
I'm the only one that does them.
There's nobody else, certainly in our city, who's really doing them.
But, you know, when you think of doing impersonations down through the years, the older stars are the best ones to do. They were so distinctive, larger than life, and easily identified. Hmm. And it gets tougher now. I mean,
what do you think that is?
What are you going to do now? Are you going to do Matt Damon? Are you going to do Brad Pitt?
Right, Johnny Depp.
Tom Hanks. I don't think so. I've never heard anybody do those people.
Is it because that the leading men now are try to produce more range in their roles? Is that why? Because I think of a Hanks, and you have people who might do a Forrest Gump impression.
Yeah,
but that's a Tom Hanks character.
Or Dustin Hoffman do Tootsie.
Right. Right. Yeah. Or in Rain Man also.
Yeah. Rain Man would be another example.
And it's as if they're doing an impression of somebody doing a character more so than the actual actor.
Right. You could do Dustin Hoffman. You're like, Judge Whopper.
You know? As Rain Man.
Mm-hmm. As Rain Man.
As him performing that.
Or Tom Hanks got box of chocolates, you know. I mean, you could do that, but that isn't really Tom Hanks.
Right, right. It's his Academy Award winning performance himself. It's just interesting how over the years you do Cary Grant. There aren't really many Cary Grants that have come along since Cary Grant, who you recognize immediately by that.
Was a phenomenon. Next to Jimmy Stewart, I was impressed with Cary Grant. Meeting him was a huge thrill. He came to see me at the Sands Hotel back in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And I remember my wife at the time was leaving with her sister, and they were walking out of the dressing room. Cary Grant went by because he was going to my dressing room. They did an about turn and came back. Their eyes were as big as saucers. I mean, Cary Grant was a guy that just lit up the room.
Mm-hmm.
People loved him.
Yeah.
And he was so nice to me, and he loved comedy, you know. I remember he said to me, he said, "Rich, you know what you do?" He said, "You know, people forget all their problems and all their worries, and for an hour and a half, you know, they're entertained and they laugh, and that's a great talent to have that. Much better than being an actor. An actor's nothing." You know, it's so funny, his philosophy on acting. He didn't like to talk about himself or any of his movies or anything. He said, acting's nothing. I mean, a scientist, a composer, I mean, those are the people we should be applauding.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're the people with talent. All I do is learn lines, you know? And it's true in a way, isn't it?
That is true, although your audience is full of people who are scientists
and
who do those jobs. So you're providing them something of value, too. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzalamidis flying solo with the many voices of Rich Little, who is headlining at Shimmer Cabaret at LVH through August 22nd.
No, right? I'm going on further
than
that.
Are you further into this?
Yeah, I'm going into September.
Correct me there.
I'm going to stay there until possibly I go to Broadway. I mean, that's a dream, but I don't know if it's going to happen. But the longer I stay there, the more producers will see the show. And, you know, if I'm not there, what am I going to do? Just go on the road? You know, I like performing there.
Yeah, and this is your home still, right?
And this is Vegas. My home, so it takes me 20 minutes to get there.
Right. How convenient. But it will be carried through the month of September, then, mm-hmm. the show at Shimmer. And you mentioned PBS. What is
Well, PBS came to see the show. They said that it's the right demographics for us. We want to reach an older crowd. We think that your show would be perfect for PBS. We'd film it. It'd be a pledge break. So they only want an hour. So, but you know, having it on PBS would only help the show.
It would be great. They would do it at Shimmer?
No, they do it in some other theater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with a set. See, where I am right now is not really a set.
I was gonna ask about that because there's some furniture out there, but it's sort of
it's a couple of chairs and a table. I mean, it's like performing in your kitchen. It really is.
I think I saw some of this furniture at the Attic during their closing sale.
Yeah,
downtown.
I think you're right. I think we raided some of the offices. But you know, when I'm on the road, and I've been doing this show for 3 years, and when I'm on the road, of course we have a set with a fireplace, and we have. Those stairs are huge, and at the end where Harvey goes up to heaven with Jimmy.
Yep.
I have depth to it, and potted plants, and alarm clock, and all kinds of things.
Right.
Mantelpiece.
We're talking about the audience response before we were on the air, and I saw the show this week, and how audiences can differ in their response to the show. Mm-hmm. Is it typically it's a very measured and thoughtful performance? You know, it's not like a guy like Gordy Brown who comes out and does 160 impressions in the first 5 minutes, and it's an insane level. It's very conversational. Do you is it easy for you to gauge an audience whether they're going to be with you throughout the whole show, the whole 90-minute experience, pretty early on? And is there a process that you use to win them over?
By the time I hit Andy Rooney, the show is really rolling.
Okay.
Andy Rooney really scores big because they're all one-liners.
Yeah, they're all funny. That's about midway through, funny. Right?
And, it's a great way. That's usually where I end the first half.
Right.
If I'm doing it in a theater, Andy Rooney finishes the first half. Jack Benny comes on for the second half. Mm-hmm. But at the LVH, I just continue on. So... I would say, you saw the show. I would say Andy Rooney and Johnny Carson and, Ronald Reagan, Paul Lynn, John Wayne. Those are the ones that I like the best.
Mm-hmm. And those are all...
Nixon.
Yeah, that's right. The Nixon impression. I mean, it's a trip through history and political history, too.
It's great because Jimmy was a huge friend of Nixon's.
Yes.
A staunch Republican. Yeah. I met Jimmy at the White House many times with Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
So that connection's good. You know, if he was a Democrat, it would be a little tougher. I suppose I'd be doing Jimmy Carter.
Probably.
Jimmy Carter will be talking to Jimmy Stewart. Hot damn. I love you, Jim. I really do.
I always felt like Reagan and Jimmy Stewart were similar personality types.
They were.
I mean, they seemed
Well, you remember the joke genteel. That went around. When Jimmy Stewart was with Reagan, people used to say, no. Jimmy Stewart is president, Reagan best friend.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, there was a time for a long time when Stewart was bigger than Reagan.
Stewart was much bigger than Reagan.
Until Reagan took office.
So
I think that they seemed to carry that relationship along. I mean, I just remember seeing clips of them together and Reagan being very deferential to him, to Jimmy Stewart.
Reagan liked, he liked Jimmy Stewart, he liked John Wayne.
Uh-huh.
And it was so funny because I would go to the White House a lot when he was president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was there, once a month, either performing or as a guest. And I was honored. He really genuinely liked me, you could tell. And one time I was there, and this is the gospel truth, but we were talking after some function, and Reagan started to do impressions for me.
Oh, really? Was he good?
And no, he was terrible. And I felt like saying, don't give up your day job. But he did, he got a Jimmy Stewart, you know, the way everybody has Jimmy Stewart who can't do it. Oh, what's a Jimmy Stewart? And I'm going to do John Wayne for you. Listen tight, Pilgrim, you know. But That's okay. I expected that. But when he did Truman Capote, I darn near fell on the floor.
Reagan did Truman Capote.
I'm standing there, and all these people are around, and he's doing John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart. And then he starts into Truman Capote, and there were some dignitaries behind him, some Chinese people from behind, from China. And when he started to do his Truman Capote, they were just looking at each other going, what's going on? You know, and here was Reagan doing his impression of Truman Capote. So I said to him, it's a true story, I said, you need some funny line. If you do, you do Truman Capote a lot? He said, oh, yes.
Oh, he yes. does do Truman Capote.
I entertain, when I'm entertaining a group of people, I always do my impressions. And I do Truman. But I don't have any good lines. Could you give me something to do? And I gave him a joke, which he used. I heard that he used this a lot. I said, well, I've got a good joke that you could use when you do your Truman Capote. He said, what is it? He said, just a second. And he got a security guy, and he wrote on his back the joke.
Right.
Right? And here's what I gave him. I said, my name is Truman Capote, and you know, a lot of people think that I wrote in cold blood, but that's not true. Actually, I wrote in ink. Well, Reagan thought that was hysterical, and apparently he used it. And I remember he said to me, Rich, that's funny. I'm going to try that out on Gorbachev.
And hoping
and
that
I'm
Gorbachev
thinking to myself,
a...
he's going to do Truman Capote for Gorbachev? This I got to see. Gorbachev's going to go, I just
imagine in what environment Ronald Reagan would be working on his Truman Capote impression.
Could you imagine standing up at the in front of Congress and going into Truman Capote?
Or an inaugural address. I mean, it would have been one of the great moments in political
maybe
history.
That's what Mitt Romney needs to do, is to do a few impressions, right?
Well, you can call him aside, you know, yeah. It wouldn't hurt. You
loosen
know?
Him up a little
a
bit.
A little bit, yeah. It could only help. What are the what's the prognosis for the show and its relationship to a Broadway booking? And it's been positioned as one. It's like a pre-Broadway show. What
one
is
of
happening?
The great advantages being at the LVH, the Hilton. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't know what LVH is. Actually, it stands for Little's Vacation Home. But anyway, the advantage is that I'm there five nights a week, and a lot of producers and a lot of Broadway mm-hmm. people are seeing the show.
Right.
So I've got about six or eight people that really want to take it to Broadway.
Well, that would be a heck of a thing. And
so it's good for me to be there.
It's a good stage for you, and
yeah, it isn't ideal because, as I said, it's pretty small. But but
they get
still.
It though. I mean, they get the general tenor of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, we've got to wrap it up here. We got to close the curtain. Thank you for coming down.
It's a pleasure. I was so delighted to see you in the front row last night.
We were right up front, looking right up at you, and we're seated near.
What you don't want to see is someone Hardy. Sleeping in the front row. This happens, you know, in Vegas, and it's not a slight, because some people come here for 4 days and they go all day and night, and mm-hmm. they come to a show and they're tired and they fall asleep. You know?
I've seen people asleep at Cirque shows. Mm-hmm. I've seen people asleep during mm-hmm. concerts. I've seen people asleep during Celine's show in this city, mm-hmm. and they don't pace themselves. Pace yourselves, folks, and get down to LVH one time. Once known as the Las Vegas Hilton Shimmer Cabaret, five nights a week at Rich Little with Jimmy Stewart and friends, 8:30 p.m., correct?
8:30. Thank you, John.
We'll do this again sometime. Thanks for coming down.
Las Vegas!